Welcome to Trapping Radio. This is your host, Clint Locklear. And as you noticed, I've been offline here for a couple of weeks, and I wish I could tell you some great story about a car wreck or a plane crash or bear got me or hog tussed me, and I don't have anything like that. Guys, I'm just being honest. I've lost a little bit of motivation with the podcast. And as I go through my daily life working on lure and stuff like that, I just caught myself putting it off to the next day and the next day and the next day. And before I realized it, I was like, holy crap. So, and I think part of it is I've done this for so long, it's hard for me to come up with topics. This is, I don't know the exact show, but it's somewhere in the mid 470s. 470. That's probably about, I don't know, 700 hours, I guess, talking about trapping. Now, there's a lot to talk about, but it is just trapping. And if I know in my mind that I've talked about something before, I try not to talk about it again, but that's getting really difficult. So I have a request for y'all. If there's something that you want to hear on the show, you're having questions, problems, thoughts, whatever it is, email me at clint@wolfernation.com and let me know what you'd like to have a show on. But please don't do like coyote trapping. I need specifics. I need to know what it is. And don't just say coyote locations. Be a little bit more specific. Like where you're at, what you're seeing, or something like that, or whatever it is, you know, I would appreciate it because it would help me tremendously to be able to think about those and be able to do a show on something like that. It could help you. It could help me. It's a win-win all the way around. And I also know, guys, I've done, 100 interviews. Trapping industry is not that big. But I do know almost every state has two or three really cool guys that trap. They're very good at it. They're kind of characters. They've got a lot of knowledge. They can speak. They're not going to freak out if they know that they're being recorded. And they make a really, really good interview. So do me a favor, before you contact me, contact them and see if they're interested. If so, then that's when I could use the contact information. I'll give them a call and see if we can work something out. Now, today's show is on how to be more comfortable when you trap, how not to be maybe not as dangerous when you trap, things that just make life easier as you trap. So you could pick any of those for the title of today's show. Before we do, I want to thank our sponsors because they're the one that keep Trapping Radio on the internet because server costs and everything like that. We have F&T Fur Harvesters, everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Most of y'all know F&T, most of y'all have ordered from F&T. Y'all know it's a good company. Y'all know that they have great customer service. You know, they get the shipping out quick. But more importantly, you should know that they're good people, and that's who you should want to work with. Our other sponsor is Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. I know Alan Sayer. He's the owner very well. We do stuff professionally and privately, quite a bit, actually. And sure, he's got full trapping supplies, snare supplies, trap tags, stuff for fishing, stuff for hunting, baits, lures, all kinds of stuff. But again, it's dealing with good people that you can build relationships with. And if you've ever talked with Alan in person or on the phone, you'll find out if you talk to Alan, he's now like your best friend. It's a personality trait that's very rare in the world today. And he really, really likes helping people. So that's one of the main reasons he is a sponsor. I have a lot of people that have wanted to be sponsors that I don't know very well, don't know their character very well, don't know how they treat their customers very well. So I just, you know, say we'll think about it later. But with F&T and Allen and Oki and Jeb and Dunlap, I know you're going to be taken care of. Next one is Oki Cable and Trap out of Oklahoma. Jeb's the owner of that one. It's full trap and supply, sells baits, lures, meats, glands, buys meats and glands as far as I know. I know he does glands, I believe. Sells, buys fur some years. I just talked to him about a week ago. He's busy as ever, just getting stuff out to customers and going to shows and stuff like that. Just a really cool guy to know, because if you need something, he's kind of like a bloodhound that can find it for you. And that's a rare thing in today's world. Lastly is Dunlap Lures, which is Jeff Dunlap, the death dealer himself. I've known Jeff for several years now. I've been trapping with Jeff several times. I've been in his lure shop, actually, and helped do some simple things with him as far as getting orders out and making some bait and stuff like that. I can tell you, if I woke up tomorrow and all my lure around the country and all my wholesalers in my shop got burned up in a fire, Jeff is the one I'd call to get lure to go trapping. Because I know what kind of ingredients he uses. I know what type of lure maker that he is. And I know how much pride he puts in his product. And that's important for you to know. Because there's a lot on the market where there's not a whole lot of pride going into anything. Our knowledge, our good ingredients. And Jeff is one of the, I'm going to dare say, few that still want to do the very best product they can for their customers instead of just what they can get somebody to buy. So that's Dunlap Lures. So what made me come up with this subject? I was going through my shop the other day and I came across a pair of shorts, long shorts, like down to the knee, of cut-off Gore-Tex pants. Now, I don't remember exactly when I bought these Gore-Tex pants, but I bought them. They were on sale somewhere. It seemed like a really good deal. The pattern's kind of goofy for me because it's like a duck hunter pattern. If you're a duck hunter, I understand that's not goofy to you, but it's not something normally that I would buy, but it was a really good buy. And I'm like, you know, it rains a lot and I don't have any type of pants like that. They're easy to take off and on. So I bought them, loved them. Well, they end up getting tore going over a barbed wire fence one day, right about the knee down to the middle of the shin. It just shredded it. Now, that's still, I guess it would be 90% rainproof at that point. But I'm looking at those things after I shredded them. And during that time, because one of the schools I taught for the USDA, for some beaver guys down in Florida, all of those guys had the same type of waders on. They were, and I know some of you trappers are going to get upset what I'm getting to say, coon hunter style waders, which are perfect for the South. And they were telling me about these waders, and I'm looking at these waders, and my waders, you could pull down some, but not the same. They could fold their waders all the way down to the top of their boot in between jobs, and they weren't sweating like I was during the day. So I got to talking about them. I found out you got to do, actually measure your inseam, your thighs, your calves, everything's custom cut. They were a little more expensive than regular waders, but not too bad. And before that time, I was using, you know, the lacrosse black ones and all this stuff. Now, they're tough waders. But if it's going to be up to, like we get, where you can be 20 degrees one day and 50 degrees the next, there's a whole lot of sweating and being uncomfortable in those things. You almost get just as wet wearing them as you do not wearing them. It seems like over a long period of time if it's warm. So I remember getting these, and I was making some sets probably for coyotes, And it hit me that, you know, I've got a rain jacket on, and I've got these waders on, because I started wearing these waders if it was muddy, just for the simple fact that it was so comfortable to wear and not hot that it just kept me from getting super sloppy and wet on the knees, where that, you know, spreads out and it seems like then a half your legs are wet and all that type stuff. I went back and cut these shorts off, and then if it was starting to rain, I could just put on these Gore-Tex long shorts. My waders would be inside of them on the top, and if I'm bending over making a coyote set, my butt doesn't get wet because the rain's not running down my rain jacket, onto my butt, soaking my pants, and then eventually leaching down into where the waders are anyway. So I was like, this is really cool. So when I saw these the other day, I'm like, that's one of those things I've never really heard anybody talk about, but for me, made a big difference when I was comfortable or when I wasn't comfortable. Now, I will say this. I've taken great pride in my life for being able to handle being extremely uncomfortable. I'll give you an example. If you go to a military base, or at least when I was in with younger people today, I don't have any idea if it's still this way or not. But you're going to the PX, which was our version of clothes and shoes and, you know, stuff for the kitchen, kind of like a Walmart is, I guess, on post. And then you have a commissary, which is the grocery store. Normally, they're pretty close. It's a big parking lot. It's always full. And it's raining. You can look across that parking lot, and you'll see two different type of people. You'll see non-combat armed people acting like normal people that aren't in the military, like you would at the mall or the grocery store in your town. And if it's raining, they're like half jogging, trying to put something over their head. They're doing everything they can, stay as dry as they can till they get in the store so they're not getting wet. I get it. That's one type of person you'll see on a military post. Then you look around, and it's like there's a whole different group of people that's going in the commissary of the PX, and they're walking like it's a bright, sunny day, and they're not in any hurry whatsoever. That's combat arms. That's guys that go out and live basically like gun-toting cattle that survive any type of weather you put them in. That's what I did. And we took great pride in to be able to handle 60 below zero to 120 degrees in a desert, to sleet and snow, to pouring down rain, to mist and rain, to ice storms, everything in between. A little rain meant nothing to us. Actually, I had a blazer when I was in the Army that didn't have a top on it for 3 years. If it was raining really hard, I'd throw a rain jacket on. That was on the way to a date. Weather and being uncomfortable did not compute to me. That's just the way life was, just like a cattle out in the field. But as I got older, probably a little softer, things that I used to take a lot of great pride in, I'm like, yeah, I don't have to get wet for wet's sake. I don't have to be cold just to be cold. I don't have to prove anything because I've already proved all that crap years ago. So stuff like the cutoff shorts of Gore-Tex pants, now I'm not saying you go out and buy a brand new pair of these things and cut them off, even though if you find yourself setting a lot of coyote traps or land traps and your butt's always wet and then your legs are always wet and it's cold where you're at and you're miserable, may not be a bad idea. That's just one of those things. Now, I'm going to go down through a list. Over the last couple of days, when I'm in the shop making lures, something pops in my head over this because I'm thinking about it and what I'm going to do this show. And I just randomly wrote down a bunch of stuff. A good rain jacket. Guys, you get what you pay for. Any rain jacket will work if it's a sprinkle. Most rain jackets are not designed for you to be out in weather for hours, which is what we as trappers a lot of times find ourselves in. And I've bought all kind. I used to wear, I still have some of the old Gore-Tex style too that I had when I was in the military in the late 80s and 90s. I had Carhartt, which is a good one. But the best rain jacket that I've ever seen, being more practical than any other rain jacket that I've ever seen, is when probably 15, 20 years ago, I was out trapping with Newt. And he pulls out this rain jacket that looked out of something like, it wasn't yellow, but it's like what you see on some of the fish sticks boxes. And I get to looking at this thing, and it's made out of real material. I'm talking, it's not so thick that you can't move, but it's not so thin that even if you are dry, you feel wet. And I'm sure you've been in rain jackets like that before. You think you're wet, and you take it off, and your shirt's dry, but it just makes you feel clammy. It wasn't like that. It's like PVC coated. What this was... And actually, I plan on getting me and Cindy a couple of these for our boat, just in case we get caught out somewhere. It's commercial fishing rain gear. So, like, I would probably start looking at Memphis Net and Twine, places like that online. I would put in commercial fishing rain gear. It's probably very similar to the ones you see, like on the Deadliest Catch up in Alaska. They're thick, but not so thick. But the difference where you start looking at these things is the way that the panels are put on. It sheds water away from you at all times. And the length, if you're wearing a pair of waders, is going to cover the top of your waders down probably about 10, 12 inches. So even if you bend over to make a coyote set, it's going to cover your butt. And the hood on that thing, you can put over a hat, you can do whatever. But rain gear for someone that traps, now if you're out west, this may not make any sense to you whatsoever. Yeah, I know you get rain, you know, every now and then. And it could be a pain in the ass, but it is not the same as here in the east. Get you a good set or a good rain jacket. One that's long enough so as soon as you, it's where it's not at your waist. Because if you think about that, how silly is that? All it does is run off your back and soak your pants. It's not even a good design. So, man, my handwriting is... Well, I've already said this before. If you're coyote trapping and it's really muddy, just wear your hip waders once. You'll see you can wallow around and it works out great. Now, the other one seems like it should make common sense to people that have to skin a lot, but I've been around enough trappers and I've been in enough fur sheds and I've talked to enough students that this is not the case. Look, the tools you use as a trapper, some of them need to be really good tools. We all strive to have a good trap. You want one that functions. You want one that fires. You want one that's easy to bed. You want one that feels good in your hands. You want one that's not causing a lot of damage. If it's muddy, can you still set it? You know, you go through all this in a trap, and we sit there, all of us, and we're always looking for a better trap. But what about knives? Now, some of you, knives are just something you have to have because you're skinning something. And some of you, I know, our knives are like artwork. They're almost like it's a hobby. You collect them. And neither one of those is wrong. But to a trapper, keep in mind, that's your tools of your trade. You need good knives and you need junk knives. And the good knives should never do what the junk knives do, and you should never expect a junk knife to do what a good knife does, because they don't. You can ruin a good knife, or the edge, pretty quick, trying to do what you would use a junk knife for. So, what do I mean by this? You went out and you caught yourself a bunch of coon, and you're going to open all those things up. Now, you want your junk knives to have a really good edge on them. Most of them are so cheaply made that you can put an edge back on them really quick because they're super thin and it's cheaper metal and it's not going to hold an edge. But, you know, two or three hits on a steel or on a stone, it's back up to running pretty quick. If you're cutting through wet fur and, you know, it's got mud or sand in there, you know, even if it looks like it's somewhat clean, it's still an animal that's been living in the woods, living in the off the banks or whatever it is, been fighting a snare, whatever it is, they're not pristine leather. You don't use good knives to make those initial cuts. You use good knives, once you make those initial cuts, to make the rest of the skinning a lot easier because it stays sharp for a long time. And I remember when I first got started in trapping, I'm trying to do this with pocket knives and stuff from Walmart and all of that. Well, I started looking around and I would find these high-end knives, like at Smoky Mountain Knife Works and going into Smoky Mountains up in Tennessee. And one day I was in there and they had the same shape of the Dexter Beaver knife. The blade was much thinner, and it was much better model, and the brand name is Victorinox. They have 5-inch and 6-inch lambskinners. Same curves, same everything. That's what I was doing at the time was beaver trapping, but I remember this knife was like $40. This was years ago, so today that's probably about $100 in today's money. And I could get a Dexter knife for $9.99. And that's what I was using. Those are not bad knives, but those are not good knives. They're mass-produced generic beaver knives. Well, I went ahead and bought one of these knives, and the difference it made with me skinning beaver, I couldn't even believe it. The difference of a good knife over an average knife. I know certain people have different things that they like for muskrats, different sizes, shapes, and some people use pocket knives, and I've noticed people that use pocket knives normally use older pocket knives back when they had good metal in them, and those seem to do pretty good. But most people just use these plastic handles, throw away, they're dang near paring knives, and they're almost impossible. Those type knives are almost impossible to sharpen and keep sharp because they're just cheap. So if you're going to be in this game, you need a pile of junk knives. And you need two or three really good knives. And you never let your hand touch the good knife when you're doing stuff that a junk knife can do, because you're saving that knife. The other thing that make your life easier as a trapper is find a technique, and I don't care what it is, a steel, a stone, a diamond steel, a belt grinder. The things you pull the knife through, I guess if that's the best you can do, I guess you can go that way. But you need to have some form of technique that you can put an edge back on your knives quickly. Because probably over half of the damage that comes to fur is from dull knives. You're pushing too hard. You're trying to force stuff. It's not working. You end up shoving it through, or it finally does get an edge started. You got so much pressure, you end up cutting the fur. If you're going to act like this is one of your main things, you need some good knives. Now, this is a weird one. It only took me, 25 years to figure out. Now, I want you to imagine what it's like when you go trapping. Now, this is probably not going to matter if you're trapping, 2 hours before work and 2 hours after work. This is not going to be that big a deal to you. But let's say you get 2 weeks off and you're going to be trapping daylight till dark, 7 days a week for 2 weeks. Or if you're retired and you're running a bunch of traps, or you're full-time and you're running a bunch of traps over long, long hours. If you put really, really low-quality gas in your car, you would never expect it to perform correctly. Now, I know they make cars now that can run, you know, with E85, and I actually think they got E83 in some places. But you know, when I was growing up, if you had a decent car and you wanted to run or perform, say a hot rod or anything, or even modern hot rods, you'll see they want you to put high octane fuel in there because it runs better. Now, you're just the same as a hot rod. You can sputter or you can roar. And a lot of it's with what you're putting in your body. So this is one of those, you may not believe me until you try it and you're going to be blown away. If you're running a lot of traps, I don't care what you eat like the rest of the year, but when you're running a lot of traps, you will run more traps, be more mentally focused, and have less crashes, especially around that 2 or 3 in the afternoon when you should be going another 3 hours, but you talk yourself into quitting because you feel like crap and you just have no energy whatsoever. Eat very few carbs during trapping season. Very few. The more protein, the more meat, and the more fats you eat during that time, you're going to be way more stable mentally and physically if you're going to run traps really hard for hours after hours after hours. Now, this is completely different than what I used to do, where I'd stop at Hardee's and I'd get a couple of sausage biscuits for breakfast. I'd be starving in no time. I would find something fast food. I've even got videos, guys. I know this. I've got videos out there where I'm talking about the superfood of trapping is corn dogs. I love corn dogs. But it doesn't help me catch more fur, like maybe some smoked hamburger patties that I've got in a cooler that I can munch on. I know that now. I didn't realize that then because I was brought up, which I'm sure most of y'all were too, if you need to have energy, you eat sugar and you eat carbs. Yeah, for a short burst, and then you crash. So my advice, which you may think this has nothing to do with trapping, is you leave your peanut butter and jelly sandwiches at home. And when I say meat, that's not one piece of ham between two pieces of white bread. Leave the Little Debbies and the snack cakes at home. And at least for that amount of time, and if nothing else, just to run an experiment so you can see how your body works on more high quality food than it does low quality food. Figure out how to take a couple of pork chops. They're good cold. Grill some chicken, hamburger patties, steaks, whatever it is. But if you want to have more energy for a longer period of times while you're exerting yourself and having to use your head, you're better off with less carbs and have by not having as many crashes. If you eat more of a caveman style diet, at least while you're acting like a caveman being a trapper. Next one is the ditch match gun. Oh my goodness. I know I've talked about this before. Guys will spend $250 on a dozen traps. After extra chain and swivels, and probably some modifications and a drag, you're up to $300, $320 a dozen. You got, your trap is right. Then you catch an animal, and the landowner's with you, or you got someone that's with you or something, and then you pull out the junkiest, non-accurate pistol that you almost have to put it against the head of the animal to dispatch it, because if you're 3 foot away, it may shoot 3 foot to the left. And y'all all know what I'm talking about. We've all been with people. Heck, I've seen people on DVDs do this. On DVDs. They can't hit an animal with five shots. And they're 2 foot away from it. Now, that's not just maybe they're pulling the trigger. You look at their gun, and I guarantee you there's no rifling in it. The sights are knocked off. And I've got a friend right now that I guarantee you today, because I happen to know he's out coyote trapping, he's got a pistol with him with no rear sights, and he wonders why he has trouble shooting stuff sometimes. Make your life easier. Get a decent quality firearm to dispatch. Now, I'm not talking that you need to go out and get a $900 super duper whatever for a dispatch pistol. That would be ridiculous. It's going to get wet. It's going to get muddy. It's going to rust more than anything else. It's going to get beat up. But you want quality. What I like, I've got Mark III Rugers. Heavy barrel, metal trigger, good sights, and I have no problem dispatching animals. But I cannot tell you how many times when I'm with other people, it's like it's the first time they've ever picked up a firearm because what they're using really needs to be in the graveyard. Now, they'll spend that $300 on a dozen traps, but they won't spend $300 on a decent pistol. And I don't understand it. As you're going trapping, if you have not had something where I'm getting ready to tell you this is going to make a big difference, it will. You need to have a spare tire. Some of you need to have two spare tires. If I was bouncing around in the high desert somewhere where maybe 4 days before I see another human being, you can bet your bottom dollar I got two spare tires and probably half a box of Fix-A-Flat. And I'm going to have a jack that I know how to use, and I'm going to be able to change the tire in weird situations, i.e. like a Hyman jack, you know, on the high jacks, is probably not a bad idea. Because when you do have one of these problems, it's going to be in the farthest part back where you're going to have to spend a lot of time walking, and you're not going to have cell service, and AAA is not going to show up and help you out anyway, and a tow truck can't make it back there. But I bet if there was inspections of trappers that are getting ready to start trapping, most of them will not have a spare tire short of one of those little Maypop things. Guys, you're asking for trouble. Another thing along that same lines, if your vehicle and you can afford it, you really need to get a winch. You're going to get stuck eventually. I promise you. And again, it's going to be a place where your cell phone's not working. It's going to be terrible, terrible weather. It's going to get brutally cold. And you're going to be really miserable. Now, you'll probably survive, but you're not going to enjoy life for a while. Now, a winch is not that expensive. If you can't afford a winch, for goodness sake, learn how to use and get a come along. Get a couple of blocks because it gives you extra leverage. And you should be able to pull out a truck or four-wheeler or Jeep or whatever you're in, because it's your responsibility to do that. Another one that seems really simple, but I've been out with enough guys where this is not the case. Why wouldn't you have in your vehicle two or three or four or half a dozen spare gloves? I don't get it. You put holes in them. I don't know how many hundreds of pairs of leather gloves. All of a sudden, I'm like, two fingers are sticking out all of a sudden. Then you go to put in a set and you, like, you know, grab a hold of something, and now you've got a finger full of thorns the rest of the day you're trying to pick out. And if you just had another pair of gloves, you could just put them on and not worry about it. If they get all wet and muddy and bloody and gunky and nasty and everything else, just put another pair on. It will make your life as a trapper so much easier. But most people don't. The only people really that I've been around that take the glove thing serious are the trappers that are freaked out about scent control, and they use the cotton gloves, and most of the time they'll have like two full packs of 24 in the truck. Most guys that use leather or cold weather gloves, they don't carry spares, and I don't get it. Polarized glasses if you're a water trapper. Dude, if I could give any advice to anybody that's going to be a muskrat trapper, a beaver trapper, or an otter trapper, get you a good pair of polarized glasses. All kind of makes and models out there. I think for the money, the best you're going to get is Costa. Now, they're not cheap, but it is extremely different than going into Walmart and getting a pair of polarized sunglasses for $19. It is night and day difference. Why is this important? You can see into the water and you don't have reflection. So I can go up to a beaver dam with polarized glasses, and I don't have to guess with a beaver coming up, because it's like there's no water there. Even in murky water that's kind of blackish, because like even when I was up with Jeff this last winter, Jeff Haggerty and Jeff Dunlap and Sarah and Nick, I could just look over the culverts and you can see the beaver runs plain as day. And I gave Jeff Haggerty a chance to look through my Costa glasses. I forgot they were prescription, and I thought he's going to fall off the culvert because it instantly made him dizzy and almost had vertigo. So, not the best thing to share with someone that doesn't have the same prescription as you. My Costas that I would go trapping with now are actually have bifocals on the bottom. I'm definitely older. And the top lens is for, so I've got 20/20 inside of these polarized Costa lens that I got. They did it at my local eye place. They were a lot more expensive. I think they were about $400. I can't imagine how many more beaver I could have caught over the years if I'd have known about polarized glasses 25, 30 years ago. I didn't wear glasses, sunglasses at all back then. You couldn't get me to go beaver trapping today without polarized glasses. You see everything. You're not out there trying to find beaver runs with a stick. You're not stepping off in them in waders because you don't know they're there, because you can see them. Muskrat holes, 6 foot deep, no problem. The little slides and stuff that are going over the side of the dam for otter, they stand out like a sore thumb. You can actually see with good polarized glasses into water where beaver and otter are going around stumps and they're clearing out the bottom. Not so much like a run, but it's, you can just see it's clear. Oh, that's a great place for a trap. Without those glasses, you're guessing. So if you're going to be a water trapper, not only will your eyes probably enjoy the relief, get you some good polarized glasses. It makes that big a difference. Jump box. I could have put this with a spare tire. You can get them at Tractor Supply, a really good one for, I don't know, $100. Your battery doesn't work, you can jump your truck. Now, will it jump off a great big diesel? Probably not a $100 one. A gas motor, not a problem. If I'm going to be away from people and I'm going out in my buggy or ATV, I've got a jump box. I've had to use that thing several times over the years. Now, one of the important factors of it is you're on the road or you're out in the middle of nowhere or whatever, and your phone's going dead because you forgot to take it off of Wi-Fi. With a jump box, you can just plug it right into the jump box. That way you can call your wife to let her know everything's okay. She's not worried that you're out at a strip club or something, and you just have a better marriage that way. So get you a jump box if you're going to be isolated at all. Now, places like Maryland, where I've trapped up there for fox, I'm not sure that's quite necessary because I don't know if you can walk a quarter mile without running into 10 houses. Places in Tennessee, I would definitely have them. Places like Louisiana, places I've been in Mississippi or out west, absolutely, I would have a jump box. Now, here's a strange one if you're trapping somewhere with warm weather. And you can find these at yard sales and everything else. You don't have to go buy a new one if you just keep your eyes out open. They don't have to be pretty. They don't have to be perfect. Get you a decent sized cooler that doesn't leak if it rains on it. And get used to freezing a couple of gallon jugs of milk after you drink the milk. Put water in there and freeze them up. The reason I say this is, If you're trapping somewhere that's getting warmer, especially on bobcats, and you leave that bobcat non-skint, just whole, you're asking for green belly and you'll start slipping really quick. Really quick. Same with red fox. And if it's really warm, that'll happen to you a lot of times on coyotes. If you have a cheaper cooler that you're not worried about, I mean, after you start putting fur and stuff in there, trust me, after the smell, after a couple of weeks, you're not going to put drinks in it. But if you know it's going to be warm, take you a couple of things of gallons of ice with you, and you can skin on the line, throw those animals in there, and then when you get home, they're good to go. Even with a cat, red fox, and sometimes coyotes, I've lost several animals over the years. Go ahead and skinning them, getting the body heat out of the way, and just having them in the back of the truck in a box in the shade, and they will still spoil. That's an easy thing that'll make your life easier. Now, another one is a skinning rack for your vehicle. I don't know of anybody that commercially makes these. But just a little bit of common sense, and it's not hard to figure out. You have a piece of square tubing on your bumper with a hole in it. And then you have a long piece of tubing. Mine was a two-part, so I could get it higher for coyotes. And I could take a pin out of the middle, so I'd have, I don't know, 2.5 inch off the bumper welded. I'd have the PVC pipe that was, say, 4 feet. That was, say, 2 inches, and then I would have the next smaller size that would slide into the 2 inches, Well, they have holes different in there so I could get different heights, lower it all the way down when I'm going down to the road, and it's just kind of sticking up above the hood a little bit. And then it'll have a cross member at the top where you can put an eye bolt and you can hang a snare or whatever you're going to do or gamble to skin animals. This was a lesson that I learned from Randy Smith. You catch more fur if you're rested. So when I went with Randy, it was the first time everything that's caught is skinned as soon as it's dispatched. Which meant it was much easier to skin animals because they're still warm. Most people don't even know what that's like because they throw them in the truck and they ride around all day and it's cold. And then they're pulling cold coyotes and stuff off or fox and you're tearing them in half. When you do it warm, it's like two-thirds quicker. And when you get home, you can throw them in a freezer and go to bed. It's much different coming home, having to skin, get some dinner, then go to bed. Or if you're going to try to put them up, now you're scraping them, and that's 3 o'clock in the morning. You need to get going again at 6 or 5:30. After about a week of that, you're a zombie. No matter how tough you are, you're a zombie at that point. Your brain does not work. So you make bad decisions. You're not that motivated. You're miserable, yada, yada, yada. It made a huge difference to me when I got a skinning rig on my big Dodge truck when I was going to Texas. Because we're catching cats. It's hot. I could throw them on there real quick, rip the hide off of them, throw them in the cooler. When I got back to the walk-in cooler, everything was good to go. Before that, we would lose probably $2,000, $3,000 worth of cats every year. Another thing that will make your life so much easier as a trapper, if you can afford it or build it, is a skinning machine. Most people don't want to catch too many coyotes because they don't want to skin too many because they're doing it cold, for one. And two, without a machine, it's a lot more difficult. Otter become really simple. I know guys that do beaver on. Fox, it's not really necessary. Coons, so much easier, especially on cold ones. Look at getting or building a skinning machine. Guys, and while we're on this, you never have too many freezers. Never. If you think you need two, you probably need four. And you'll find out that they get full just by the way a trapper's works. Get you some rubber patches for your waders or your lacrosse boots or muck boots. Only cost a few dollars. You get a hole in one of those things, you're going through mud and water. It does not make for a fun day. Extra socks. If you're somewhere where it's super cold, I would go as far as just like we did in Alaska, you had extra clothes. And if you're one of these guys that's trapping beaver through the ice and you don't have extra clothes, dude, you are asking for it. And it could be the very last day that you ever go trapping. Now, this is a strange one because I've never been. I've grew up in the water. I've spent so much time on canoes. Spent a lot of time in kayaks. On the water a lot now with boats. And I'm very comfortable around water. I can't tell you over the last 30 years how many trappers, some of them pretty big name, have drowned boat trapping. And most of the time, it's not some great big, you know, like they ran into the Loch Ness Monster or whatever. They couldn't get back. They didn't realize how deep it was when they got out, and their waders filled up, or they slip and couldn't get their footing when they're at a boat ramp. Something. It's usually something small. Or they almost drowned, but they survive. And it's usually the stories. It's not some crazy thing that happened. It's normally something that seems like you would never think about. If you're going to be trapping, I would dare say, in the water a lot, and it's really, really cold, and you have on chest waders, one, you do not wear big rubber chest waders if you're going to be in deep, cold water, because they will act like a weight. If you're going to be in there, get you the neoprene kind that sucks up to your body, where you, if you're like the body style of most trappers, is very non-sexually appealing. And then you put a belt right below your nipples, so that you actually make yourself a little bit more buoyant. But even getting in a boat and stuff now, boat ramps and in and out and things like that, because I can tell you many times I never got close to being drowned, but I got panicked a few times. They make life preservers now that are super tiny. You won't even know they're on. And they run off a CO2 cartridge. They last about 2 years, and you'll have to get a new one. They're like $50 a piece. Now, $50 may seem like a lot of money, but trust me, if you're drowning, that's a really cheap insurance policy. So if you're starting to slip and you crack your head and you're disorientated, all you have to be able to do is reach the little circular clip and pull, and this thing blows up with CO2 air, and at least your head's going to be above water till you get your noggin straight. Or if you fall out of the boat with a buddy and he's really, really hurt, and you're striving to not get hypothermia while you're helping him, and he's got one on, all you got to at least do is pull his, then pull yours. Now you can work the problem. Simple, simple fix could be very important. Okay, I'm going to go through some of these other ones pretty quick. Trap bins for storage. Barrels. Something. Not a pile. Make your life so much easier as a trapper. Keep your 330 separate from your 220, separated from your 280s and your 110s or 160s or whatever you're using. The coyote traps you like to use over the coyote traps you may have to use. That way you're not digging through them all the time. Ones with drags, one without drags. Coon traps separated from your muskrat traps. Find some way to keep those separate. And just storage bins is what I found to be easier. So if I know that I'm going out to do a coyote job, I know which bins I go to grab that's got drags with traps right there. Or if I know I'm going to be staking for whatever reason, I've got a bin with traps for stakes. If I'm going to be beaver trapping and it's going to be footholds mostly, I can go to that bin. If it's 330s, I can go to that bin. And it's not like where it used to be with me, where I would just it'd take like 45 minutes of frustration to get whatever thing I needed. When I went to bins, it made a huge difference. Another thing, if you're using snares or you're using extension cables, get you a little bucket. You know, like a 2 gallon bucket or a paint bucket. You keep your snares in one, your extensions in the other, already rolled up. You don't have a mess. You're not tangled up. You're not hooked up in drags and chains and trap jaws and shovels and picks and everything else. It's completely separated. Once I figured that out, my life became so much easier. Find a trap bag, box, bucket. However you're going to take your traps to your set, make sure it's comfortable to carry, is big enough that you have what you need in it, And if you really look at your stuff, you're probably carrying too much stuff and you can get rid of half of it. But one of my pet peeves when I'm trapping is having something that I set down and it keeps falling over and half spilling out. Get a bag of some type that doesn't fall over. You do a lot less cussing that way. Road flares. I can tell you in Alaska, everybody carried road flares. With a road flare, I can pretty much start a fire in any conditions that I need to. And if you think about the conditions we're in most of the time, guys, if you get wet, cold, hurt, damaged, you know, stuck, whatever it is, heat can become something that you either enjoy and live with or you might not be alive in the morning from. Road flares are easy to use. They last a long time, and you can catch wet wood on fire with them. If you don't want to go with road flares for whatever reason, find some way that you have to easily start a fire when you're tired, your brain's not working, your hands aren't working very well. I'm not talking about when it's the perfect fall day and it's bluebird outside and you're trying to start a campfire. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when you need to have a fire, how are you going to start a fire? And road flares are the easiest thing that I've ever seen before. You need to have a way to mark your sets. You need a system. Some people use GPSs. Some people use flags. Some people mark trees with an axe. I don't care how you do it, but you need to find a consistent system that you can always use to know where your stuff is at. Some people write it down on paper, and I've seen people that do that, and they still can't find their traps. First off, just me being a smart aleck, you should be able to go to that location for the rest of your life with amnesia and put the trap in the same place every time. So if you get within 10 or 15 feet, there should be a reason you put a set there anyway that should clue you in. But most of the time what happens when you need to mark sets are roads or trails. Well, do I got three more sets up here or four more sets up here? Like a simple thing that I do when I come to the end of a line, if it's on a road and not a loop, and I say I'm using flagging, I put three straight lines of flagging like on a fence. I know that means it's the end. Until I see that, it's not the end. See, that's just a system that I've come up with. Running snares, the flagging always goes 5 to 6, 7 feet in front of where the hole is under the fence. That way I can see the snare, give my chance of time to look down and see the hole. If I've got it over and I just see the flag as I'm driving past it, I may not see if the snare is still set in the hole. If it's on the other side, now I'd have to be guessing going back the way that I'm driving. Have a system to mark your roads and your snares. Apps. I'm not going to go into apps because there's probably better stuff out there that I even know about. There's apps out there that work off GPS that give you the property lines of the property in real time with you having a pin being you where your phone is at. That way you don't get on someone else's property. That's it. That can be very important when not getting a bunch of tickets. If you're going to be in a canoe, a kayak, or a boat, always have an extra paddle. Always. If you're going to be in a boat, canoe, or a kayak, always have extra stuff you can put on if you get dunked and it's really cold in a waterproof bag. I have not got to this point yet, but I'm sure somewhere in my future I will. If you're having trouble setting your traps because you're older or you've been injured or whatever it is, get you some setters and have a spare. Make it easier on yourself. And lastly, if you ever need to use what I'm getting ready to tell you, you'll be so glad that you listened to me on this. Either have a spare key for your vehicle, whether that be an ATV or your truck or both, on your body that you do not use except for emergencies. I keep mine in my wallet. Or, when I had my Dodge truck, I kept two keys in separate places on the truck, wired. I would have to take and actually unwire them so they wouldn't fall off or bump off or whatever. I'm not talking about those little boxes. That's fine for going down the road. I don't think those are going to last going through some of the environments that trappers have to deal with on a daily basis. Trapping wire with a key on the top side of your frame somewhere, it'll be there. Now, if you lose your key and you're in the middle of nowhere, you're in a pickle. If you have a spare key, you can get back home. Ask me why this is so important to me. I'll let you guess. I've done that before. Luckily, after 4 hours of backtracking everything, I found my key. That's never happened to me again. The stuff we've covered, guys, is not complicated. There's no rocket science, physics, and all that stuff going on with this. What this is just trapping for a long time, living through a lot of stuff, and me thinking, going, I don't want that to happen again. Now, the beauty of listening to a show like this or listening to someone else that's been around for a while is you can listen and learn from their aggravations and life experience without you having to live with those aggravations and life experience. Needing to start a fire can be very important. Needing a spare key can be very important. Being able to jump your truck off because the battery died for some reason could be very important. A spare tire can be very important. Not putting holes in fur because you've got some good knives to do what good knives do is very important. Having a good dispatch pistol so you don't look like you've never touched a gun before can be pretty important. Keeping your traps where you can find them is pretty important. Not having your snares wrapped up around every piece of thing in the back of your truck can be very important. So there's like things that just make your trapping life easier. There's things that make your trapping life safer. And there's things we talked about that just keep you a little bit more comfortable. I hope this helped. Somebody out there not to get in some of the situations that I've been through in my life. And if you talk to anybody that's done a lot of trapping, they all have these like little lists that's built up over time that are like, we'll not go without, we'll not go without, we'll not go without, we'll not go without. Because they did, and they didn't enjoy it. And I want you to go out and enjoy it. So go enjoy it. And I'll talk to y'all next week.